We made this.
Welcome to the Starlight Ballroom. Hey!
Hello and welcome to Shipwrecks and Comatose, the podcast about Red Dwarf, here on the We Made This podcast network. My name's Mark Adams, and I am your host for this special as we head towards Series 6, eventually. And with me at this time is Matt Latham. Hello, Matt.
Hello, Mark. How are you?
I'm not too bad. It's good to be back. We've had a little bit of an unplanned hiatus, and I'm glad that we're getting some episodes back out there. Mm-hmm. How about yourself?
Yeah, I've been okay. Just nights are getting colder. The heating bill's getting larger. So, yeah.
It's also a good reason to stay in and podcast, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Also with us is Carl Bryan. Hello, Carl.
Hello. How are you doing?
Yeah, I answered that question when Matt asked it.
Ah, fair enough.
How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Sorry, it's been a very hectic day.
So, yes, we're not looking at Red Dwarf because we're doing a special. We're looking at the Red Dwarf expanded universe of TAT, as I've decided we're now calling it. We're doing one of our lovely specials that I really enjoy.
The RDEUT.
Yeah. We get about a quarter of the listens for these that we do for the main episodes, but I don't care. But I also want to thank the people who do listen to all of the really fucking inane, pointless specials. We love you. Well, I love you. I can't speak for the rest of them.
I mean, this week we've hit a milestone in our downloads as well, which is just phenomenal and just makes me want to keep doing this. And it's showing that there's a reason for all this and people are enjoying it. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. The milestone was 20,000 individual unique listens.
And it's also a steal. 20,000 and a steal. So it means you now take 15,000 of Pigadisc's listens, and now you've Shipwrecks and Comatose has 35,000 downloads.
That is a brilliant way to introduce what we're covering today. We are covering Craig Charles's pretty new game show called Money Bags. I really like the idea of basically never running out of shit if we look at every single project of every single member of the Red Dwarf main cast. And when this came out, I was like, should we do a special? And you two idiots said, yeah.
We've learned that you have a problem and we're too scared to stage an intervention.
It's some weird kind of Pavlov's dog reaction. Should we do a special? Yes.
It's like, oh my god, there's this TV show and there's a guy called Craig in it. His surname begins with a C. It's called The Royal Family. We're going to do a special on that. No, that's Craig Tash. I don't care.
I don't think we'll ever get quite as tenuous as the one we did on Gapper, but we can keep trying.
Give it time, Mark.
But yeah, I thought it'd be fun to look at this because I really quite, it's kind of a guilty pleasure of mine to enjoy game shows when they're on. I don't think I tend to go out of my way to watch them now, but I do love game shows. How about you two? What's your background with game show watching? Do you have a favourite? Do you watch a lot of game shows, Matt?
Not really. I'm much more perhaps into kind of the odd panel shows. So I've always watched Have I Got News For You, and recently I used to watch it ages ago and recently binged the episodes of Mock the Week that were on Netflix, and it's now a case that I kind of watch Mock the Week and Have I Got News For You on like BBC iPlayer catch up. I mean, they're not game shows, but they're the closest I probably watch. I have finally gotten into Only Connect for this series, finally, after just kind of catching bits and pieces. So I've actually watched all of Only Connect. But other than that, don't really. I mean, perhaps on a Saturday when suddenly Pointless comes on, I'll watch a bit of that. But other than that, game shows, I'm not much a regular listener, watcher of.
Right, and how about you, Carl?
I was thinking about it just then because of mine are tend to be more panel shows, but back in the day, I was, you know, I always used to watch Catchphrase, which is just a classic, and because you can sit there and join in. Same with Blockbusters and Countdown. I actually have the official Countdown app on my phone.
Nice.
And I play it. I think I remember telling you this during lockdown. I think I'd got to about 200 rounds of Countdown.
I don't know whether that's something to be proud of or pleased with, to be honest with you, Carl.
I don't think I was either at the time when I admitted it. It was more a cry for help.
Are you sure it's 200 and not 400? Are you just living?
Yeah, I beat it for the majority of the most part. It's fun coming out with... I found out that Smeg doesn't count during Countdown.
What?
However, Hentai does count. It's a really fun game, but as I'm probably the same as Matt now. I tend to lean more towards, like, I still watch Mock the Week. I drifted out for a while, and I've got back into it again. I think the new round of comedians they've got are actually quite good. I've kind of drifted off Have I Got News For You, because it can lean into smug. For me, the prime watching of game shows was when I was a kid, I think most of us have listened to Play Your Pods Right, things like Nightmare. Yes. And Finders Keepers and those kind of things, which I'm pretty sure which count as game shows, but they're all
Games
variants on a theme, aren't they? Yeah, Games Master. Somebody sent me today, Games Master's back.
With Trevor McDonald.
Yeah. It's great casting, isn't it? It's
amazing.
Yeah, I think it airs on Wednesday on E4, but I think the first episode is actually on YouTube.
That's what I've been sent, and I'm really looking forward to it.
So I think that's what I'm watching after.
And I think for me, I'm quite similar to you, Carl, is my taste in game shows is very retro. I'm happy on Challenge. I could lose a day on Challenge, you know? But I think a personal favourite of mine as a kid, probably because for some reason I was into magic, I liked Paul Daniels. Wipeout was a favourite of mine.
Oh, I remember that now, yeah.
Not the Bob Monkhouse remake. Bob Monkhouse can get in the sea. But Paul Daniels, brilliant. And like you mentioned, the kids' game shows like Nightmare were fantastic for me.
I remember one that was basically a crossword one.
Crosswits.
Crosswits with Andrew O'Connor.
Yeah.
I always just remember that, like, the good ones that have got the really distilled idea that can run and run and run are always on at like midday or 1 o'clock. Mm. And with this one's on at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I really like the idea behind this. It took me a while to get into it, but I really like the idea of money bags.
Yeah. I mean, another one that I just loved as a kid was Going for Gold and Turnabout. That time slot that you're talking about has had some absolute bangers.
Mm. Oh, Going for Gold. I may not remember the game properly, but everybody remembers the theme song.
Going for gold. The heat is on. The time is right. No, I don't remember it at all.
No.
Actually, if we're going to go then the Saturday night route, I remember kind of being into stuff like Gladiators and Generation Game. Bruce Forsyth Generation Game. And I was also really into John Virgo's show, Big Break, with that Bellend who hosted with him.
Mm. Oh, yes. I don't think we need to mention his name because he's Bellend. Yeah. But yeah, Big Break was loads of fun. And John Virgo was an excellent host.
Yeah.
Look at us being woke.
We're so woke.
Wokey bollocks. Wokey bollocks.
We're so woke. But I think it's about time we got on and talked about Moneybags, don't you?
Yes.
So Moneybags is a new show. It's been going about 2 or 3 weeks, and it's presented by Craig Charles of Red Dwarf fame.
I didn't realise he was a Red Dwarf. I don't know what he
was talking about. Okay, Matt. That it's so modern compared to the shows we'd previously talked about that it has its own hashtag, #Moneybags. I mean, yeah. And the rules... So everyone seems to think that the rules are complex, and I'm like, no, they're fucking not. Do you agree that the rules are nowhere near as complex as you thought they were going to be after hearing that the rules were apparently so fucking complex?
This was, for me, like when I was in school or college and somebody got me to do a question and I overthought it and thought it was harder than it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I stepped back and looked at it, gone, oh, this is dead simple. That, for me, is what Moneybags is. When he first told it, was like, right, okay. And it took a couple of rounds. And then it was like, oh, it's just what it is. Okay, yeah. And then I was fully involved. So it literally only took an episode. I thought it was going to be like 20 minutes and it's 45.
Yeah, it was longer than I expected too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really quite simple. And that's the best ones, the ones that are just simple with a bit of a twist to it.
Yeah, and I think the reality is Moneybags actually having Moneybags is a fucking gimmick. Mm. It could easily be a buzzer show, this. But I like the gimmick. Matt, do you agree that the gimmick makes it something a bit more special than an average game show?
Yeah, I mean, there's. I'm still unsure about whether I like it or not. But because occasionally I'm there going, is this tat? And then finding myself getting really, really kind of like shocked when something completely swerves the game and stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's. I found it easy to follow eventually. Once you got the first couple of rounds and then some of the contestants were saying that they was doing kind of tactics and everything.
Well, the first episode, they didn't go crazy, crazy elaborate on explaining the rules. They just got on with it. And I think that was the right way to go. Just, this is our show, get used to it. And, oh, actually, it's quite simple, even though you've all been saying it's complex.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's the key with these things. It's rather than explain it, let's just do it. And if people get into it, then it gives you that sense of, oh, no, I understood this without being told how to do it. Now I'm going to watch every day because I've figured this out, mate. You know, it kind of gave me that thing when, by the time I got to episode two, it's like, oh, I know what this is now. I can watch a few more episodes of this.
Yeah, and it's got that kind of university student gimmicky feel to it.
It really does. It feels almost like it could be on stage at a student's union. Until you said that, Matt, I hadn't thought it, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah, I mean, like, I had a quick look at the hashtags on there, and I'm pretty sure the majority of people talking about it are kind of university students.
Right.
Just watching it.
But surely they'd be in lectures at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Probably only me, because I was probably the only person that didn't.
That doesn't surprise me, Matt. I watched lots of Diagnosis Murder and Teletubbies when I was at university.
Oh, God, I love Diagnosis Murder.
Oh, we should do a Diagnosis Murder pop. No, we shouldn't.
Yes. Yes, we should.
No, you can edit.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah. Well, it's got that kind of like midday, kind of, well, early afternoon kind of guilty thing where you're watching it going, oh, this is nice, this is nice. While in the back of your mind, you're going, why are you watching this?
Yeah, I'm working from home. I should be working.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know about you two, but I had to watch it on all four.
Me
too. But then if you're watching this live, it's a case of going, you're there going, oh, am I enjoying this? Why am I watching this live? How am I in a position to watch this live at 3 p.m. on a weekday afternoon?
It's definitely comfort telly if you're ill, I think.
Mm. Yes, yes.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Did you enjoy it?
Yes, I did. It's fast-paced without really being fast-paced, if you get what I mean. It's it gives the energy. I think Craig Charles is a big part of this, is it gives the energy of, you know, this is quite powerful and it's going to be like really fast-paced, and it's a bag on a conveyor belt.
Yeah, I often think there's a conveyor belt underneath them and they're just using the same like six bags.
Probably.
Yeah. It's simple. I mean, I was quite surprised. I'm like going like, oh, man, do I have to watch 3 episodes of this? And then, like, occasionally you get quite caught up. And I think, like, knowing the using the same contestants, I did start watching half the fourth one on Sunday. Just I thought, it was part of me thinking, you know what, I might just finish the week. But I never got to finish the fourth one.
I had the same thought. So it turns out that I clearly did enjoy this because I was happy to watch more than we designated. We said we'd watch the first three so we could get a decent gist of it.
Yeah.
I'd probably say we actually only needed to watch the first two to get the actual gist of the show.
Yeah, the first two episodes really run the gamut of what can happen in the show. Mm-hmm. And I only got to the end of the second one, but I felt, we'll get into this obviously, but once we'd hit all the sort of highs and everything of the second day, I was sat there going, I might watch the rest of the week just to see what happens next. You know, will this player come back before the end of the week and you know, clean up, or you know, what's going to happen during the week?
But having the same players for a week, it's quite a modern take on the game show. Pointless does it, I know that. It seems to me like, as classic daytime telly as it is, it's definitely much more modern than the stuff I was watching in the late 90s when I was at university. I think it's got something modern yet classic in a weird way.
Yeah, I was trying to work out how many they shoot in a day, because there's no way they're doing it every day for a week.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
But
I wonder if they do it all in one day and they just have the contestants and Craig Charles change their clothes in between each episode.
Yeah, I think that might be the, because I've, back in the day, I got to go to Central Studios in Nottingham, and it was for the Central Food Network, and I was in the audience for a cooking show, and I literally just had to get up, move to another seat, and, you know, put a jumper on or something for various ones, so it looked different. And they did the same in the shows, but they do refer to, like, oh, last week we did this, when it was really an hour ago. Plus, if you're there for, if you're a contestant and you're there for the whole week, what do you do in between?
Yeah, I reckon they probably do. I mean, so it's 5 45-minute episodes. Each one probably takes about 2 hours to film. Two, four, yeah. Six, eight, ten. That's a long day, but I reckon they probably do it in a day, you know?
Yeah, because obviously everyone's got other jobs to do. I can imagine Craig Charles has got other jobs to do. So you can film, you know, a month and a half's worth of stuff in a week.
Mm. Yeah. Actually, talking about the jobs, what the bloody hell is an escape room consultant?
So I actually know the answer to that. You know, like, if you go to the Crystal Maze in Manchester, the Crystal Maze experience,
yeah,
you have a character who replaces Richard O'Brien. Right. Escape room consultants do a similar thing. They play a character in an escape room for you.
Right. Oh, okay. That explains that then.
Because I've applied for that job and I didn't get it and I'm bitter.
Oh. Right. I'm just thinking, like, I don't know, like, in my head, it's like Gregory House, but if Gregory House did escape rooms.
No, that's not
like,
what it is.
Like some sort of maverick, like how to make your unsolvable escape room escaped or something stupid like that. In my head, I think I've glamorized that role a lot more.
I had a irrational hatred of the escape room consultant because they got the job I want.
Did you not come across enough of, I've got my theatre arts degree, but the bill doesn't shoot anymore, so I can't get work. Please hire me, please hire me.
I mean, that's the thing. I didn't get the job that desperate actors apply for. I'm gutted.
The guy, when I went into the one in, oh, I think it was Manchester, I went into that one, and the guy who did it was a guy called Xander, but we could call him X. But for the Crystal Maze, have you, either of you two, been in the Crystal Maze?
No.
They have got Richard O'Brien at the start doing an introduction on a TV screen, where he hands over to somebody, and then whoever it is comes out, and they have four different consultants, because you have four teams going around at once, one in each zone. And Xander leapt out of a room, literally like in front of us, like kung fu leapt. And my mate, who was sat there, had just an irrational hatred of him for the entire time, because he spooked him the second he walked in. Like, he was like 14 shots of espresso and a line of something energetic. And it was like, yeah, I don't like you. You're a bit too excited. But it's quite funny because the characters do slip as you're going around, because you're with them for a good hour.
Hmm.
So, yeah, they do. Eventually they just start talking like, you know, Mark, who works at the Crystal Maze.
Yeah.
I'm stunned they haven't redone that with Funhouse.
Yeah, that would be cool. I would totally do that.
Yeah, with the 90s surprises.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mystery tour.
Tandem for a day is the one that I want.
A Game Boy. Moving on. Should we talk about the set on Moneybags?
Let's.
I quite like it. As much as it seems a little bit shonky for a show that's giving away that much money. But I like the shoot. I like the visual of pushing lots of money down the chute. I thought that was cool. The conveyor belt at least works and isn't as shonky as the Generation Game. And it's fucking fast as well.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it's some poor bloke on a bike. It looks like an actual conveyor belt, so it's not some bloke on a bike, because it doesn't stutter.
Yeah, I watched it initially thinking, how smooth is this going to be? And it's very smooth, you know.
Mm.
It's got value.
Yeah, and I think the partitions are probably a COVID thing. the plastic partitions, because they look like the partitions they have on the judging panel on RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yes, and going back to Mock the Week, they've still got them between the contestants on Mock the Week.
Yeah.
Even though they've got an audience now.
Yeah, I think the audience was live for this. It didn't feel like canned laughter, but I'm happy to be corrected on that.
Yeah, it was very good. I mean, you get the feeling that the set itself fits into the corner of the studio. It didn't look massive.
No.
Like, there's probably another game show on the other side of the room that films on the off days.
Yeah.
I did think it was like greengrocer grass to start with when it came on. It's not often they use green for game shows. It's always like red or blue or yellow, but bright green and yellow is just... I don't know whether they're trying to give it a kind of leprechaun-y feel or...
I don't know if it's green for money.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, technically, I mean, like, we don't... Our money's not green. I think it's the dollar that's usually green, but I think... Yeah.
Green and gold.
Fivers are green, aren't they? Oh, no, they're blue fivers, aren't they?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, you're right. We haven't got any green money. I'm an idiot.
Because green's always been, like, synonymous with the dollar.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just the green, and because of the world economy seems to be revolving around the dollar, it's always been, green's always been seen as the colour of money.
It's a good look, though. I think it does stand out. It did feel different from other shows in how it looked.
Mm. Do you think the dollar pound is green?
Ooh. I'd like to think it's red.
Why?
I don't know, just because of the whole, because it's just the red dwarf thing. Just a lot of things turn out to be red, so I'd like to think it's red.
Sorry, that randomly came into my head because we started talking about dollars. But yeah, the show format works with three qualifying rounds, followed by a final where three people have qualified from the previous rounds, followed by a solo round a la the Gold Run on Blockbusters is what I thought. Did it feel slightly overly long to you?
A little bit.
Yeah.
The thing that kind of got me was, like, game shows, you've got rounds, and obviously you've got rounds that have got names. So, you know, we've Beat the Clock or The Eliminator or something like that. The final of Moneybags is called The Moneybags Final.
Creative.
Yeah.
Does exactly what it says on the tin.
Yeah, all I can think of is that the best you could do? Not even a 3 o'clock in the morning after chain smoking, could you not think of something better than the Moneybags Final?
Like the Gold Run. I mentioned the Gold Run, and the Gold Run's a great name.
Exactly.
If you think about it as well, if you think about some of the more, like, the classica, the more legacy game shows, like your Blockbusters, your Catchphrases, the final round is a variation of the games before. It's a very unique premise on which you have to do. I mean, Only Connect. It's the weakest part of the show for me, which is the vowels, the missing vowels bit. But it's different with this. Just it's the same thing pretty much, except with a slight difference in that it seems that the show really doesn't want to give you any money.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's just a slight variation. It doesn't feel like it's different enough from the other rounds.
It's the only game show I can think of where you have no guarantee of going home with anything until the very last thing. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? On most shows, you can at least bank something. But everybody could, like, literally all of them could come in and go home with absolute nothing.
I'd say that was established by Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, actually. But this is particularly savage. And I would also say more savage than Millionaire.
When I mean that, it's sort of like in terms of where there's multiple contestants.
Oh, okay, right.
There's not often where you get, like, you know, Catchphrase or something. Somebody at least wins, or at least wins something. Whereas with this, everybody could turn up for the whole week and have, like, in one of these, we're going to see someone with £150,000 in the bank and then just have it ripped away.
But do you think that's... Yeah. Partially due to the huge amounts of money that are on stake. And obviously they don't want to give away that kind of amount of money. So they make it difficult.
Mm.
Mm. True. Yeah. It just feel very quite harsh where, like, they get to the final bit and it's like, oh, okay, you answer the first question. If you get it wrong, you leave with nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
But nothing. Yeah. You're right. But it feels mean spirited. I enjoyed it because I'm clearly more mean-spirited than I'd like to admit, but the whole thing from the very, very get-go did feel a little bit mean-spirited to me. Would you agree, Matt?
A bit, yeah. One of the things that I noticed again looking at Twitter, and it was looking at, I think, this week, which is its second week, so it was talking about contestants that we've not watched. There's a couple of tweets which are kind of saying, man, the people on Moneybags are a bit thick. I mean, you don't get it on the actual show itself, but the way it seems to kind of, how do I phrase this? Others' misfortune porn at times when something happens.
Schadenfreude.
Schadenfreude. So, for example, I think it was the third episode, which was it Lizzie, who's the Scottish lady?
The panicky picker, as she got called by Craig Charles.
Yeah, the panicky picker. She got her first question right, so she got about, what, £7,500, and then the question she was asked was, which of these hands in poker is higher than the thing? And, like, she clearly didn't know what it is. She guessed, and you could see behind her everyone, like, every other person who knew the answer, and immediately in the background you could see them going, put their hands in the things and stuff, and it seemed to... Yeah, and the camera angle, I think, was quite deliberate, actually, where it looked like it was, like, aiming to get the reaction of everyone else behind her, going, oh, you picked the wrong one.
To the point where I think the camera operator probably had the right answer in front of him and knew to go and look at them behind her for that shot. I don't think that was not deliberate. In fact, I think a lot of this show is very, very deliberate. For a second think that anything is random whatsoever. I think it's all very meticulously planned to make this sensational. Am I being fair, Carl?
Oh yeah, that's showbiz, baby. But yeah, that's the thing. If somebody wins a certain amount of money, there could be a producer backstage going, right, send out this question because I reckon that she'll lose it all here and that'll make for great telly. And yeah, I can imagine that there'll be someone in the gallery going, right, camera three, this one's a bankrupt, this one's a thingy, this one's a, you know, so they know exactly where they're going.
Yeah, because I think that might go with the picking of the contestants as well. So I got halfway through episode four, and this was Thursday, so the fourth day. The guy, Mikey, everyone kept saying there was nicking his tactic of looking at the reaction of,
Yeah, Mikey was savage and quite right, but a little bit cunty, let's be honest.
Mikey came across to me like he'd had a cigarette with Craig Charles before the show and now he thought they were mates.
He didn't get picked again, whereas I think Wendy, who got, I think, on her first go ahead, like, got to about 150,000. I think she got picked on Tuesday, Wednesday, and she got picked on Thursday as well, so she was on the first half of the fourth episode that I watched. Whereas some of them only got picked once. I mean, I think it's Gerard who won the first day. Like, you never see him again. He's just sat there in the back.
It's just not random. I don't believe it for a second.
When they first initially got called up, that felt kind of random. But then, the more and more... It's like a film. The more and more it reveals, the more and more you're like, oh, this is deliberate.
Yeah, because I think there's something weirdly watchable about how, I think particularly the contestant Wendy, how she was picking stuff and... Like, there's a couple of questions that said, no, yeah, I know this. No, wait, do I? Like, she was a U2 fan and...
I've heard of U2. Aren't they what that band that did the reasonably good Batman theme?
They did do a reasonably good Batman theme.
What, Seal? Baby!
Kurt's not even here and we're taking the piss.
Somewhere his bat sense is tingling.
hang on. There's a message on the Shipwrecked and Comatose group. Oh, hang on, it's Colin. Stop getting you two wrong. But I think David something, and then she picked up going, no, I'm a U2 fan. This is right. This is right. I think. And then there's another one about alcohol or something. He goes, oh, I know my drinks. And there's another one, oh, I know my chocolate. And I think the fact that she got picked for a third day, whereas some only got picked for like one and stuff. It's then again though, maybe the second half of Thursday and Friday is all the ones that didn't get picked. So unless they get like about three goes per person.
Yeah.
Did anybody, because I didn't go all the way into the week, did anybody by the end of the time you'd finished watching just not get picked at all?
I think they'd all got picked by the end of day three.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
How many was there in all? Was it eight?
Ten.
It was ten.
Blimey.
But it was lots of fun, and I think to call the contestants thick, like people have been doing on Twitter, does a disservice to the pressure situation of the really quite fast conveyor belt, particularly during the final. I think people will, even if they know the answer, kind of panic grab. And that's a design, a deliberate design of the people who created the show. I genuinely think the show is designed to be savage.
Yeah.
You've got to have like sub-zero levels of calm to be able to process something coming down that conveyor belt going, yes, I know this. You've almost got to be sociopathic to be able to be that in command of your faculties to go, yes, I do know who wrote a memoir called The Journey that's a former prime minister called David. You know, it's or you can guess. You know, it's a strange one. I wouldn't be able to do it. I don't think any of us would be able to do it. Maybe Colin, maybe Kurt. Kurt's a machine. But
so I had a few subjects that I know I would have done very, very well on. WWE champions I'd have cleaned up on. Cheese I'd have cleaned up on. Flags I'd have actually done all right on. But there weren't many that I think I'd have been good at. Australian animals, I actually was surprised as well. And author's first novels.
Yeah.
Just out of, as I think we all have watched a lot of 90s cartoons, when the first person in the WWE round was Groon the Destroyer, did everybody go, well, no, that's a Thundercats baddie, obviously. God.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I think Craig Charles kind of shot himself in the foot there because he made a reference saying that they're either wrestlers or made up. So basically, and said, but the phrase was WWE champions, and I'm not much of a wrestling fan, but I know the names. I'll recognize the names of wrestlers, particularly WWE wrestlers. And then if you've got made up names, it's very easy to suddenly guess. A bit more thought they would have put known wrestlers that weren't WWE champions, but to make it slightly harder. But that's just
what subjects would you have found easy then, Matt? Out of the ones that we saw,
the WWE one definitely. I can't remember off the top of my head about any of the others.
I thought the what's taller than a Shetland pony, that one I thought was pretty straightforward.
It was batshit fucking crazy and I loved it. And I'll never forget that Danny DeVito is taller than a Shetland pony because I recorded this episode of Shipwrecked and Comatose.
Oh yeah, there was like, is it how many, I've got more than 8 legs, which was, I thought was quite a clever question actually, because like you're going, more than 8 legs? What? And then they'll have like the band steps. Or a prawn.
I laughed at the band steps as an answer to that question.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd recently seen steps and I knew damn well it was 10 legs. I'd have got that one right.
Yeah.
Recently, I forgot you went to see steps. Yeah.
Recently had an episode of Pick a Disc about the Steps album Buzz as well.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and I think steps were like were my first gig technically as well when I was like 15.
Wow.
But yeah, I just saw that and I'm like, and I quite thought those questions were quite clever because it was like, it plays on perception and gives you a base level and then makes you think more. And I quite like those questions perhaps more than perhaps the debut author one.
And it did feel like it was wildly, wildly unpredictable what the topic was going to be. There were things like that which were almost logic problems. And then there were things that if you've got knowledge of it, like wrestling or like the parts of the body or author's first novels, it was specific quiz learnt knowledge. Mm-hmm. And again, it all goes down to the mean-spirited element of it. If you're a logical person, you'd be stronger on the logical ones than you would on the general knowledge. Were there any things that you thought were dead easy, Carl, yourself? What topics would have been good for you?
The Shetland pony one, definitely. The wrestling one. I wasn't too bad at the things that are divisible by 3.
You see, I'm shit at maths. That one was my nightmare, that.
Yeah, that one was all right. Then what was the... I actually, there was a lot of it where I was like, this is a trick question. The main one being that one I was talking about earlier, he wrote a former prime minister's called David, who wrote a novel called A Journey. I was like, that is too much information to be correct.
Mm.
You know, things like that. So the people called David, there was a few where I was like, I didn't know the exact answer, but it was easier to use logic, if you know what I mean. I think it was it people who'd won the best director Oscar called David, and like, don't remember one. So I was right. Mm. But I don't, there was somewhere I was like, oh, no idea. I think the people who got airports named after them, I was kind of 60% confident on.
Yeah, I did okay on that one.
Yeah.
I quite like the people born in the Southern Hemisphere as well.
Yes.
That was, I thought, was quite, again, quite a clever kind of conceit for a round.
The one I got completely wrong was animals indigenous to Australia.
I got a perfect round on animals indigenous to Australia. And I think this is what I'm getting at by asking you both what your strengths were here is we all had stuff that we were great at and stuff that we were completely perplexed by. And it is designed, again, quite mean-spirited, that really it is pure luck whether or not you've got a cat in hell's chance on this show.
Yeah. It'd be like for us if we went on, like, round one was Red Dwarf, and like, oh, brilliant. And then round two is the works of Tolstoy. You're like, oh, God, or trigonometry. We'd be stuffed.
Yeah.
Carl, we remember the question of Dwarf.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So you can stop with your, oh, I wouldn't have got this, 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 and this.
I'm still traumatized. I'm still fucking traumatized from Question of Dwarf, and it's been nearly 12 months.
Well, I laid down, I know we're talking about, we won't reveal what it is, but we were talking about what we're going to do for this one. And I still issue the challenge to you four of you four versus me. Mm. But someone would have to write the quiz. And I'm pretty sure you will drop me.
Nah. It'd be a bit like Blockbusters if we have, like, uneven teams, won't it?
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah.
So, do you see that? A nice little ref. Oh.
The man's a pro.
Yeah, quite. Unless we specifically want to go through any of the contestants that we liked, I'm kind of done here.
Oh, Thierry. A child pretending to be a man.
Oh, poor Thierry.
Got his dad's best suit on and grew out the tash. Maybe even, like, added a bit of eyeliner into it to thicken it out.
I think Thierry told the story of what they were aiming for with this show. He had wildly fortunate luck during the qualifying rounds, and then had horrible, horrible luck due to his own panicking in the final. And they must have rubbed their hands together when the second episode they recorded was Thierry's wildly fluctuating fortune, giving you exactly what you can expect from this show.
That's the thing. I can't remember the name of the contestant, but basically he winds up with, for those listening, he winds up with £154,000. And part of that, he won like 125 of that off somebody else. And from what I'm understanding, that person, our names completely escape me now, gets picked again and again throughout the week. But Thierry gets to the final and loses all of it. And on the first question, from what I'm right on, isn't it? He just loses straight away.
Yeah.
And I get the feeling, as much as they're like, oh, this is making great telly, they cut away from him because that boy was going to cry. His eyes were, you could see them like vibrating in his head and glassing up. Like he's, you know, there's a family somewhere who are now disowning him because he's ruined everybody's Christmas.
It's because he had like the mark. Oh, I can't remember what time he had, but he had like something about creating. Oh, he had like a list of things he wanted to do, and it was all kind of selfless.
They were all super virtuous, weren't they?
Yeah.
I'd buy a fucking house. It wouldn't be simple for me. I win a fuck ton of money, I'd buy a house.
I find it quite funny. Gerard was saying that I think he wanted to perhaps get a home in, like a second home in France, but then do stuff to help the hospital radio station he did. Jerry was like, I want to help out my mum or something, blah, 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 blah. And he got to Lizzie on the third day, goes, I want to build a pub in my garden.
Good for Lizzie.
Yeah.
She's fucking honest. Good for her.
I said to my partner as we were watching it at the time, I said, why isn't anyone honest and go, I'm going to take a small amount of it, Craig, and it's going to be drugs and hookers. just the greatest, no, put aside a good chunk of it for, you know, a house or something sensible, and the rest of it, the greatest blowout you've ever seen in your life.
Or someone going, I want to hire a hitman.
Yeah.
And then just not say anything else.
Yeah, maybe you're not allowed to mention going on a drug-fueled blowout to Craig Charles. Maybe that's part of the contractual thing when you sign up.
I've just realised something. We've gone over 40 minutes on this and we haven't actually discussed Craig Charles at all. He is looking good for 57.
He's great. Yeah. His cheeks are so red. Do you know the thing? He's got such rosy cheeks.
You mean he's got a good makeup artist?
I don't think that's the case. I think he's just, I've seen him on like interviews and stuff. He is just a cheeky chappy. And he's out of all the Red Dwarf cast, he's the only one who I could see hosting a game show, but also not very likely to host a game show.
I think he's great as this host. I think it suits him. He's enjoying himself and it's infectious because he's enjoying it.
It's not his first game show either.
No. I mean, Cyberzone, we know it, we love it, and one day we'll special it.
I have never seen Cyberzone. I'm very much looking forward to that.
I don't know if I can remember watching it.
I think I found an episode and it's on the playlist of we could do a special about this kind of thing.
Wasn't Cyberzone basically Nightmare but VR?
Really bad VR. Like very basic, everybody's a block VR. And it's when, I don't know if you remember, but when VR first came out in arcades, you had to stand in the booth so you didn't basically fall over. And the headsets were like, they'll break your neck. They're so heavy. It was those ones. And he, I swear, Fashnu stole a Wooga from Craig Charles.
I think he did too.
Yeah. But, I mean, for this one, I thought he was quite, as much as it's a show that was playing on people's bad luck and just losing all that, I thought Craig was really quite lovely to people. There was one moment where it became obvious he'd probably been in the studio a bit too long when he did the finger guns. Do you remember that bit? I think it's when Thierry's there and he just goes, boom, 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 boom. And I just felt somebody in the gallery was going, what was that?
Yeah, calm down, Craig. Calm down. Yeah. You still got 6 hours of this.
Like, did we let Craig at Starbucks again?
I think he got the right balance of charming, but not too much kind of chatty bollocks with the contestants. And I really think, I mean, I've only seen 3 episodes, but I think he's got it. I think he's got the quiz show hosting down to a T. Brilliant stuff.
I think that this could run like Deal or No Deal. Yeah. I think it's a simple enough idea. Mm-hmm. It's got enough of a hook to keep you watching. And it's got a host that's charismatic in Craig Charles. This could be undercover hit for Channel 4. I think it could really do well.
Yeah, I think so.
I think it's one of those things, I think after a while, I think it might need a while before it perhaps starts getting more noticed.
Yes.
Like it. So what will probably happen is that they'll probably find a gap a bit later on in the schedule, and then they'll probably show a repeat somewhere, and that's where you'll probably capture a.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Celebrity Moneybags.
It's an inevitability.
Yeah, it's going back to it though. It's, you know, I could see Craig. You know, Craig Charles is very good at this, but could you see any of the other Dwarf 4 doing a game show?
I don't think I could really. Maybe Robert Llewellyn, because he's hosted stuff like Scrap Heap Challenge, hasn't he? Which is sort of a game show, sort of.
In this kind of format, though, the studio kind of quiz show thing, because I can't see Chris Barry doing it without playing a character.
No.
Danny John-Jules, maybe.
Maybe Hattie Hayridge.
Yeah, Hattie Hayridge would be interesting.
I can perhaps see Norman Lovett doing Nevermind the Buzzcocks.
Oh. Yes, definitely not this, but I could see Norman Lovett fitting in on something like maybe Have I Got News for You as well.
Mm. Something where it's not like super high energy.
Yeah, I mean, he is in his 70s now, isn't he?
He still works, though. He's not stopping.
No, good for him.
Yeah.
So I think we've managed to get a lot of conversation out of something that we weren't sure we would. So I'm really glad that we did this, gentlemen. Thank you for joining me for this slightly weird special episode. Matt, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Facebook /Twitter/Instagram under the name Pick a Disc, about the podcast that I host called Pick a Disc, which is a music podcast.
And Carl, where can people find you?
You can find me at allmylinks.com/Mr. Carl. I'm not up to a great deal at the moment, I won't lie. But I am hopefully going to have some new projects soon, probably in the new year.
Brilliant. Watch this space, I guess. Ooh. And for me, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at MarkAdamsHC. The two projects I'm working on at the moment, podcast-wise, are Chucky Vision, which is a podcast about the TV show Chucky and the overarching Child's Play franchise. That's at Chucky Vision on Twitter. And I'm also still doing Right in the Childhood, which is a podcast about kids' TV, generational differences, and rose-tinted glasses. That's at RITCpod on Twitter. All the podcasts we've mentioned, if you're listening to Shipwrecked and Comatose, they will be on the same platform. So just search for them. You'll be able to find them. So thank you, Matt, and thank you, Carl.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you.
And until next time,
Shipwrecked and Comatose, putting out specials that will last 45 minutes or your money back.
Well, that's going down the chute.
Yeah.
Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast, was created and produced by Mark Adams and Kurt North. You can find us on Twitter at Red Dwarf Pod, and we are part of the We Made This Podcast Network, which can be found online at wemadethispod.com or on Twitter at We Made This Pod.
Hello, everyone. This is Tony, Network Chief of We Made This. As you know, our podcast network brings together a brilliant assortment of talent who talk about all kinds of pop culture content, such as the episode you've just listened to. We're not going anywhere, but we'd love to keep the lights on for even longer if you're able to support our network on Patreon. For just £2 a month, you get your name in lights and the satisfaction of knowing you're helping us produce more great audio. And for £3 a month, you'll get your name in lights, but you'll also get access to an exclusive bi-monthly podcast from the We Made This talent pool on podcasting, pop culture, and, well, you tell us. We'll take your suggestions. For less than the price of a coffee per month, you can help keep We Made This going. Just head to patreon.com/WeMadeThis. That's patreon.com/WeMadeThis. And get the ball rolling. Elsewhere on We Made This.
Chucky Vision.
I've been on some Chucky forums, and there is a lot of hate about Chucky being woke, having a homosexual agenda, how it's ruined the franchise by making it too gay. And I'm like, really? How can you possibly suggest that it's ruined the franchise by being too gay, when Seed of Chucky is a thing?
And even if people, like, I know some people, like, I mean, Seed of Chucky is quite a debatable film, but, like, even Bride is very camp. People should have known the sensibilities of this franchise ages ago.
Free with this month's issue.
The editor, Mark Sutherland, who's a cunt.
A notorious man.
Yeah, he's the man that ran the magazine into the ground. He opens the issue with a really fucking cringy editor's letter.
Oh yeah, he does.
Which says, for the first 8 months of the year, the alternative nation was depressed. UK garage and pop shite was ruling the charts, and our music was being pushed off the airwaves and common room stereos across the land.
Oh Jesus.
Now I looked into the alternative music scene of the first 8 months of 2000. Already released that year, there had been Primal Scream's Exterminator, Blood Flowers Body Cure, Suicide Pact You First by Therapy.
Movie Versaries.
The highest grossing film in the case of Avatar. I don't think anybody ever considers it popular, but everybody saw it, which is really weird. It's this strange case of this film that made so much money, pushed special effects forward so much, and it isn't based on any intellectual property. Not directly anyway, but it has zero cultural footprint. nobody talks about it.
Yeah, apart from the whole visual thing, right? Like, yeah. Like it's impossibly mediocre. It is so middle of the road. like it's not even bad enough to be spoken about.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This Podcast Network.